Hashem, Baruch Hashem. So hello everyone, it's wonderful to see you as people are still coming in. I want to thank you all for coming again to the second class of Song of Songs, or Shir HaShirim, as I would call it during our series. It's a five class series where last week, in our first class, we introduced the Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim. We talked a little bit about who is the writer, Shlomo HaMelech. We introduced the idea of having a physical, almost sexual kind of relation, or I would say description of relations between Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and God. We talked about, can we read Shir HaShirim as a simple text, as a novel, as a song? Should we read it with interpretations, as a book? So on and on. We also introduced a little bit of Shlomo HaMelech's, the dispute over Shlomo HaMelech's character in Jewish history, whether his books should be included in the Tanakh, whether they should not be included in the Tanakh. We also talked a little bit about Shlomo HaMelech, I would say the first Shlomo HaMelech, at the beginning of his kingship, as a righteous king that does what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants him to do, as a loving person that loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves him. The verb ohev, love, appears in different times in the beginning of his kingship. And we also saw what happened at the end of his kingship, towards his last days, where Shlomo HaMelech loved again, but now not God, but rather he loved Nashim Nochriot, many foreign wives, foreign women, and he collected that 1,000 wives to his castle. We also said maybe we can see that when the Navi says in Melachim, or it says that Shlomo HaMelech had 1,005 songs, maybe it's 1,000 songs, one for each wife, and five more for someone else, or for himself, or whatever. But this is for last week. What we're going to do today, and I see Benny, Shalom, Todash Itztarafta, thank you for joining us. This is amazing to see you, amazing to see all of you. I'm planning of doing today, and of doing in all the rest of our classes, until the end of the series, is first of all to dive into the songs themselves. That means that we're not going to cover the entire book of Shir HaShirim in this series. There's no way we will do that. But what I want us to do to get from this series is first of all learn together at least some of the songs that are in Shir HaShirim, and we will do it while learning a line after line after line, a word after word after word. We're not just going to talk in the macro level of Shir HaShirim. Rather, we will dive into the micro level, the micro level that we can, in understanding every and each phrase, every and each word, every and each sentence. Why is the sentence here? What can we learn from that? What can we learn about the song from the structure of the song? For example, you will see as we do it in this session, so on and on. And what I want us, all of us, to, that's my first time learning seriously Shir HaShirim, so I'm talking also about myself. What I want all of us to, I would say, accomplish and achieve from this series is that we will be able, maybe, to continue learning by ourselves and maybe opening Shir HaShirim and having a little bit of a clue what is really going on in this book, even without a series or even without a class. We will see if this series is going to go well, and we will not going to finish everything. Maybe we will do another series afterwards where we're going to complete the discussion, but we're not there yet. So for today's sources, you all got it into your email. I also sent it in the chat. I will resend it to the chat. I'm not going to share the screen, as I not usually do. So it's better for you to print it. If you printed it, that's very good. If you can just open it in a different tab or a different computer or a different device. I want us all to be here and to see each other almost like as in person. I will also say that the first page of our sources, which contains the first song in Shir HaShirim, is a very important page. We will go back and forth all the time between the different sources that start on page number 2, and we'll go back to the song every time to see a little bit how it evolves. I will also want to apologize that this song, in general, this series, will focus on the Hebrew of Song of Songs, because like in any other literature, we can't learn it not in the original language. Of course, there is translations for everything that I'm going to talk about. There's also translation of the first song, which appears on the bottom of the page. We will read together the translation, but that it will be a great proof that in every translation there is commentary. In every translation there is a hidden motivation of the translator that is trying to convey a message through his translation. And we will see that we should not understand Shir HaShirim according to its translation, because this translation is based on a commentator, one out of many. But rather we should learn it from the Hebrew text, and this is what we will do through this series. But don't worry, we will read the English as well. And if for some reason, I speak too much in Hebrew, or I read things in Hebrew that I didn't, God forbid, translate it, please stop me, please let me know. We will try to do it slowly. It's going to be in a slower pace than my usual classes, alright, because we're going to learn the words and the shirim and the sentences. But I will try to offer my understanding from the first song. And I heard that Claudette earlier saying that you will hear, depends who your teacher is for Shir HaShirim, you will hear different ideas and different interpretations, which I totally agree with. That's going to be my personal Idan Rakovsky interpretation. Each one of you can bring his own interpretation into the song. I would love to hear what he has to say, and I would love you to disagree with me or to agree with me, or to, as usual, ask questions and comment on almost everything that I am going to say. The first class, the first song that we're going to dive into today is there's no titles to the Song of Shir HaShirim. If you remember, I said last week, Song of Songs, the book, is not only one long song from the beginning to the end, but rather there's different songs. I don't exactly remember the number, but there's different songs within this book. I gave it the title of Love or Disappointment. This is the title of the song that I personally chose. It doesn't appear anywhere else. We will see towards the class why I chose this title to the song. I also want to say before we start that I am going to use most of my method is going to be textual analysis of the song itself. That means that I am not going to dive into the commentators most of the time, but rather just read what we see in front of our eyes. But given that, we will see commentators as well as academic scholars that learned this book. But we will try to get a broad, I would say, the broadest picture as possible, the broadest image as possible to that. Yes, here I'm going to send again the sources in the chat, Nathan. It's good to see you. All of you received my, instead of Nathan, all of you received my email yesterday, right? About the timing of the song. Okay, very good. I sent out the email yesterday. Usually I send it in the day before with the sources. So, with no further introduction, let's dive to the song itself. We'll start reading it in Hebrew, slowly. Then we will move to the translation. Alright, you have it in the sources, in the first page of the sources. The first song actually opens not in verse number 1, but rather in verse number 2 of Shir HaShirim. Why? Because verse number 1 is an introduction, an opening to the entire book. The verse number 1 says, Shir HaShirim Asher Lishlomo. Alright, this is verse number 1. You can see in verse number 1 in the translation, you know, if we go back and forth. Verse number 1 in English says, the Song of Songs, which is Shlomo's. Which is Shlomo means that he wrote it, that maybe someone wrote it on his behalf, for his dignity. We talked a little bit about it last time. I don't want to dive again into this portion. And now we start our first song, which is verses 2, 3, and 4. That's all. Three verses in our class today. Starts as follows. Yashkeni mineshikot pihu, kitovim dodecha miyanim. Lereach shemanecha tovim, shemen turak shemecha, alken alamot ehavucha. Moshcheni acharecha, narutza. Heviyani hamelech adarav. Nagila v'nismecha bach. Nazkira dodecha miyayin. Meisharim ehevucha. Now before we read the translation, I want to say, don't, if you don't understand the Hebrew, that's fine. Also, I don't understand the Hebrew. All right, it's not a Hebrew that someone can understand. It's not a modern Hebrew that we use here and there some words, but it's a very sophisticated, high-level kind of Hebrew. All right, again, we'll read the translation, but I want to say, because people joined us now, the translation for itself is a commentary that should not be taken as the obvious explanation of the song, but rather this, the translator, which I use here, I think is Koren. What they did is using, in order to understand what the word means, they opened the commentators and they chose among the different commentators what is the, according to their eyes, would be the correct meaning of the word. Alright, so this is one understanding of the song, only one of it. Alright? So the song of songs, which is Shlomo's. Verse 2 and 3. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Like the fragrance of good oils, your name is like flowing oil. Therefore, young maidens love you. Verse 4. Draw me, we will run after you. The king has brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in you. We recall your love more than wine. They loved you sincerely, sincerely. Now I will tell you, there's so much going on even in the English. Even the English doesn't make sense. You would think a translation. What can be wrong with the translation? First of all, there's first person, right? I am, let him, maybe the third person, maybe we. Who are we? Who is talking here? We'll do it slowly, step by step, don't worry. Before we dive into the words themselves, I want to open with understanding the structure of the song. And not for no reason, I copied the Hebrew one from a book by Professor Eliyahu Assis. He was the dean of Judaic Studies faculty, I think of Tanakh Studies faculty in Bar-Ilan University. And he wrote a book about Shir HaShirim, which I will quote several times during this session and in this series in general. And he split the song, because in our Tanakhim, in our books, it's all as one block of text. But we should not look at it and read it as it. Songs have meaning also in their structure, not only in their content. So look how we broke down the verses, because this very much makes sense. So the first part, first of all, you can see that the song has two different verses, right? There is the first part and the second part. Two parts of the song, we'll call it parts, not verses. Two parts of the song. They are identical parts. You can see that each of them is consistent out of three lines, right? While the first two lines are consisted from two parts, right? Two different sentences. And the third line stands by itself, only as one sentence, right? Yeshkeni min shikot piyu, ki tovim dodecha miyayin. There's two parts. Le'reach shemanecha tovim, shemen turat shemecha. Again, two parts. And and this part, the macro, the verse, I would say, finishes with alken alamot ehavucha, only one line. And it repeats itself for the second part of it. So first of all, we can see there is meaning and thinking and thought behind the structure of the song, which is my first thing that I want to convey in this class and in this series. Shir HaShirim should be learned not only by its content, but also by its structure, which is correct not only for Shir HaShirim, by the way. It's a method that is correct, according to my opinion, to all Tanakh. All right? Also to Tehillim, Psalms, for sure, for all Psalms, songs, and so on and on, but also for prophecies, for example, of our prophets, and also for stories like in Genesis, like in Bereishit, and so on and on. Trying to see the structure of the text can first of all tell us something. First of all, we see that it's not just random words or random lines, but there is two parts for this song. First thing that I want to mention. Yes, Ruhama, yes.
You read Yashkeni, but isn't the word Yishakeni?
Yishakeni, you're right. You're right, my bad. I mean, we know that Americans are better than Israelis in reading with Nekudot, right? With the Nekud, because you learn it. I never learned it, Nekudot. Maybe I learned it in first grade and I forgot. And I learned it again for my Bar Mitzvah reading, but you're right. You're totally right. It's Yishakeni. You're totally right, and it's an important thing because we will see in a minute. Another thing that I want to for us to understand is the relation between the opening verse of the entire book and the first song. What did we say here? The first verse opening the entire book says, the Song of Songs, which is Shlomo's. And then there is a song, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine. Who says this line? That's not Shlomo, that's not a male, right? That's a female, with his mouth, not with her mouth. So we open it saying Shlomo Melech wrote a song, but the first verse is not said by a male. It says said by a female, right? By a female character. Put that in mind. That's for us to understand, first of all, that this song would be said entirely from the perspective of a female, of a woman. The entire song is written, I would say, or is said, that's a verb that we'll use here, from the perspective of a woman and not from the perspective of a man. Not from the perspective of a male, in that sense. Alright, put it, the entire song. The entire first song. There are other songs in Shir HaShirim that are from the perspective of men. But this, and most of the songs, I don't remember the ratio, but most of the songs in Shir HaShirim are from a feminine perspective. Alright? Put that in your mind. Now, look at the number of verbs before we dive into the psukim themselves. You know, before the verbs, look please on the Hebrew one. You see there is almost like a mirroring, like reflecting, each verse reflects the other. Every part reflects the other. For example, you can see that in both parts there is the word wine. For example, wine appears in both of the parts, right? First of all, it appears in the beginning of the first part. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, for your love is better than wine, right? Wine appears in the first part and also in the second part. Why in the last sentence before in one for the last? We recall your love more than wine. First of all, wine appears in both sides. More than that, the word in Hebrew. Look at the Hebrew one. The last words in both parts is the same word. Alken alamot ehavucha. Same thing in the second part. Meisharim ehavucha. The word ehavucha closes both parts. In English, it would say love. But again, you can see that because of the grammar of English, the word love is not the last word because you build the sentence differently. So in English, it says, therefore young maidens love you. And in the second part, it would say, they loved you sincerely. Right? That's the word you're saying. Sincerely. Thank you. So, but in the Hebrew one, both parts end with the same word. E havucha. Love. They, or someone, or whatever that is, loved you, in a sense, alright? Just for you to make sure to see that. Also, I would like to say that, look on the verbs that we can see here in this song. Look, I will read the verbs in Hebrew. So we have yashkeni, which is kiss me. We have mashkeni, which is draw me, pull me. We have narutza, which is run after. There is run. We have havieni, bring me, brought me. We have nagila, rejoice. We have nismecha, which means glad or exalt. And we have also nazkira, which is to mention. Many, many, many verbs in only three psukim. Those of you who attend my other Tanakh classes, you know that I usually count verbs in order to convey also a message. That means this woman that is writing the song or is saying the song, she uses a lot of verbs to convey her message. That means she's looking at it from an active perspective. I would suggest that might mean that her love towards whoever this is, this king, this man, Shlomo, whatever, Knesset Israel, the Shekhinah, the divine presence, whoever this song is addressed to, she really wants to love him, and she uses a lot of verbs in order to convey it, alright? Many, many verbs means she's active. She's willing to work hard in order to do it. And she's using many, many verbs for that. This is for the introduction. Now, for the structure. Now we will dive for each. We will read each and every verse by itself and we'll try to understand what it means. Questions so far about the structure of the song? So far, so good. I hope we achieve something also by seeing the structure. Yes, Ruth? Ruth, you're muted. You have a question? Okay. I think you're froze for a minute. Okay. Now let's see what we have first here in the song itself. First of all, the first verse is Yashkeni min ishakeni. Thank you. Ishakeni min neshikot pihu ki tovim dodecha miyayin. First part. Ishakeni min neshikot pihu. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. First of all, we see that this woman, she wants him to kiss her. That means they're not in relations yet. That means she doesn't know him good enough, or maybe she knows him well enough, but this love is not fulfilled. So she wants to convey her desires to be kissed by him, right? Think about it in that way. It's not like a husband and a wife that says, kiss me with the kisses of your mouth, because she wants, she almost like a request, I want you, I desire you, I want you so much to kiss me with the kisses of your mouth. First thing that we see here in this sentence. Second thing that we can see here is we have no idea who are we talking about. Who is the woman that is talking? To whom is she talking? What is the relations between them? Do they know each other beforehand? Maybe they don't know each other. Do they have history together? What age are they? From what families and background do they come? We don't know. And this is not for no reason. Because maybe what the commentators, we've seen it last time, and we see it also today, what they understand in the parable is that when you don't give, when you don't provide the writer background, or details, or information about the characters, then maybe the characters are not important, but the message is more important than the characters, right? Think about it in that way. That means that the message of Song of Songs is more important than its characters, alright? According to this kind of reading. First of all, what does it mean, Yashkeni mi, Yishakeni mi neshikot pihu? What does it mean? Yes, Ricky.
When we don't know who it is, it can also mean that it's universal, that it could apply to all of us.
Wonderful.
Each one of us could have these desires for that particular...
Wonderful, wonderful comment. Thank you for that. I didn't think about it that way. Please, thank you. And if any of you have any comments to share with me, we'll learn it together. All right? Thank you, Ricky. Wonderful. What did it mean? Isha keni mi neshikot pihu. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. What did it mean? So look in source number one. First of all. Let's read a commentator. Let's see Rashi. Rashi, what does Rashi has to say about this passage? First of all, source number one. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. She recites this song with her mouth in her exile and in her widowhood. If only King Shlomo would kiss me with the kisses of his mouth as of yore. Because in some places, they kiss on the back of the hand or on the shoulder. But I desire and wish that he behave with me as his original behavior, like a bridegroom with a bride, mouth to mouth. Rashi is that's an amazing Rashi. That's such an amazing Rashi, such a wonderful Rashi. First of all, to see how romantic Rashi can be. There's some kisses on the back of the hand, some kisses on the shoulder, says Rashi, and there are kisses on the mouth. And they are not the same. So when she asks him, I want your kisses from your mouth, that means something. She doesn't just want his kisses, but she wants the most intimacy kind of connection to him. Not just to have relations with him, not just to have a connection with him, but to have the deepest, closest, most intimate relation with this, whoever that's going to be. All right? What else did he understand, and this is throughout his commentary, is that this Shir HaShirim is a parable about Am Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Galut, in the exile. That means that Am Yisrael wants HaKadosh Baruch Hu and wishes to have HaKadosh Baruch Hu's close connection to him in the Galus. We're not going to dive into this type of commentary, but we will see it in Rashi over and over and over again. That's why he says, this woman is a widow, according to what he says. This woman is a widow. She had originally relations and interaction with an intimacy with this man, and she wants to restore it. She wants to have it again. Kiss me just like you kissed me under the chuppah, according to Rashi. This is the meaning of this pasuk. I want to bring Professor Assis in source number two. Professor says that understands it totally different. And I apologize for the translation because it's my translation, so it might not be in good English, but we'll try to do it the best way. Professor Aziz says as follows, source number two. The woman's longing for the man is not mutual. Look what he says, it's not mutual. As is clear from her wish, let him kiss me. Not let us kiss. Let him kiss me, right? This expression, which some scholars saw as a strange expression, came to present the imbalance between the man and the woman. Imbalance. The kisses of his mouth implies that the man gives many kisses. Kisses in plural. He has many kisses. He gives many kisses. And the woman also wants to enjoy them. Think about it in that way. Indeed, later in the song, it seemed that many women want the man. We will see it. That many women want the man. The poem therefore reflects the longing of the woman for the man, but there is no exclusive connection between them. On the contrary, there is a great distance between them. Now, it's different than Rashi. If Rashi says this is a widow that wants to restore what it was before, he says there was nothing before. There is an imbalance between the two, between the couple. She wants him, his kisses, and he has many kisses. Now, this idea has actually, evidence in the Midrash. Look in sort of number three. The Midrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah, which is a Midrash based on the Pesukim of Shir HaShirim, says as follows. Source number three. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says, the people of Israel heard only the two first commandments of the Ten Commandments in the voice of God. Only the two, the first two. How does he know that? As it says in Shir HaShirim, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. With the kisses, but not with all the kisses. This midrash is amazing. It's an amazing midrash. It compares the Ten Commandments to kisses from God. Just think about it. Every commandment is a kiss that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving to the people of Israel. And when she asks, give me from the kisses, that means she's not asking for all the kisses, but she wants a portion. She wants a share. She wants something. Also, look at me. I'm here. I want you. Just give me something. Maybe I will not be able to get all of you, even though I want to, but give me something. Give me one, two kisses. So they understand that I'm Israel. The people of Israel heard only the two commandments, only the two first, because it's only some of the kisses, not all of the kisses. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful understanding of this sentence. So this is for the first sentence, kiss me from the kisses of your mouth. Any questions so far before we move to the next part? Okay, let's move because we'll need to cover a little bit more from what we're doing. Next part of the same pasuk is Kitovim Dodecha Miyain. The translation says, for your love is better than wine. This is the translation. Your love is better than wine. Kiss me with the kisses of your mouth, for your love is better than wine. How can we understand this second part of the verse? After we understand the first one. One second, Ricky. One second. First of all, the word dodecha. The word dod is very interesting. We spoke a little bit about it last time. Look in source number four. The word dod, in source number four, the word dod, we can see it also in Yechezkel, in Ezekiel, chapter 15, says as follows. When I did it in Hebrew, first of all, ve'evov alaich ve'er'ech, Vehine itech et dodim. In his prophecy, he says as follows: when I passed by you again and saw that your time for love had arrived, this is the nevuah for Am Israel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will restore the connection. But the word he uses for love is dodim. All right, that's an ancient Hebrew word that expresses love. All right, and when we say kitovim dodecha miyain, your love is better than wine. Alright, now how should we understand? What does it mean that your love is better than wine? Different understandings. Rashi, which is not in your sources, I will say it outside. Rashi says, what does it mean that your love is better than wine? He says, your kisses that I just talked about in the first part of the verse, they are better than drinking wine. Wine is a very expensive, a very rich kind of drink, kind of beverage. And he says, I prefer your kisses than drinking wine. Now think about it, because Rashi worked in a vineyard as a French. Think what it means for him as a French when you compare kisses to wine. Very interesting in that sense. But he says it's simple. That means that she wants his kisses more than she wants wine. Rabbi Yosef Krah, which I brought him in your sources, in source number 5, who was a scholar in the time, the generation of Rashi, not many people know him. It's really chaval, because he's outstanding, and his reading of the Torah is fabulous. He writes as follows in source number 5, how he understands this, your kisses are better than wine. He says, it's good to love you and get closer to you while drinking wine. Therefore, I desire the kisses of your mouth. He's not saying that your love is better than wine, but rather it's good to drink with you wine, because then we get closer. Maybe by drinking wine, you will actually kiss me. So Rabbi Yosef Krah understands this verse not as comparing, but rather as a tool. I want to drink with you wine, because maybe then my desires will be fulfilled. Which is fascinating. We're talking about a rabbi from the 11th century. This is how he reads the story from French also, like Rashi. Alright? Another idea that we have, not in your source, I'll read it outside, brought from Das Mikra, which is a modern commentary on the Tanakh. They write as follows. What do they mean that your love is better than wine? He says, I want your love or your kisses, because just like I can be drunk from wine, I'll be drunk even more by your love. Think about it that way. We compare wine, not because wine is good for drinking, but because of the output, the consequence of drinking wine. I'll be so drunk from love. There's a song about it. I think drunk from love. There's a song, maybe. I'll be so drunk from love, more than I'll be drunk from drinking wine. Yes, Claudette. And then Ricky.
I have a question.
Yes.
Is it somewhere it said that the love of Torah is like wine, like drinking wine?
The love of Torah is like drinking wine. Yeah, we'll see it not only here.
Can we try to equate the Torah here with the wine in this story?
Might be a Torah. Might be a way to see the Torah here. Might be Torah. I would ask, why wine? Why not oil? There's going to be oil also in the sun. We saw it. There's oil. There's water. We say en Torah elamayim. We say that if we don't have en mayim el Torah, we need our Torah is our waters. So we use beverages, oil, wine, and water usually to convey, but not milk. We never use milk, by the way, in that sense. But yeah, that can be Ricky.
You study verbs. I'm a linguist. I study words. One thing I'm curious about is that there is a bit of a change between the person. Ishakeni is third person.
Thank you.
Third person.
Thank you. Thank you for seeing that.
Is second person.
Thank you for seeing that. This well, I'm just gonna repeat what Ricky said, because I'm gonna dive into this question. We move all the time between the persons. Who is talking? I about you, about all of you, we as together. Who are we talking about here? Are you here? Are you somewhere else? Isha Kenny means she called Piu. Let him kiss me means he's not even here. He's somewhere. Let him kiss me, not let you kiss me. That also shows that there is a distance between this female and the male. She wants him to kiss her, but he's not even here. Who is she talking to? He doesn't hear her. Maybe she's talking to herself.
Who is Dodecha? That second person.
Your love. That's the same person. We moved from third person to second person. It's like we always draw further and then we get closer. We draw distance. We distance each other and then we're getting closer to each other. Also, when the poet uses those two, that's a technique for him to say that this lady probably doesn't own this man. He's not in her hand anymore. Or maybe he never was. And she feels closer, and she feels for distance. She feels closer to him, and she feels distance. So we move from second to third body throughout the song all the time. We'll say it over and over again. Alright? That's a very important point, Ricky. Thank you. That's also a method for the poet to convey a message that probably they're not too close. Maybe she wants to be close, but they're not too close. Let's continue. The next pasuk. L'reach shemanecha tovim. Let's read it in the English. The rest of Anecha Tovim, you're like the fragrance of good oils. The rest of Anecha Tovim, Shemen Turat Shemecha. Your name is like flowing oil. Now we move again to the second person. Now we're talking like he's right here. What do we mean by oil in that sense? So first of all, we need to understand, historically, today we make fragrance from alcohol, but back then they used to make it from oil. That means that oil used to have very good smell. Alright? And when we say Reach Shemanecha Tovim, what do we mean when we say that? So we might say, first of all, that we see that the relation between this lady and man is expressed, first of all, now by smell. First of all, it was by taste. We said about wine. Now we moved from tasting to smelling, right? Think about it. We'll see it also further on. We started with tasting, we moved to smelling. More than that, we can see that when we say that lerech shemanecha tovim, shemen turak shemecha, what is shemen turak shemecha? What does it mean? Exactly, what does turak mean? Their commentator is trying to understand what does turak mean. Most of them say it's like when you spill one oil or one fragrance to another and you feel the smell. You can smell it everywhere. If you move, if you break a fragrance bottle, for example, the entire room will be filled up with smell. That means that his name, Shemecha, his name is spread out. His good name is spread out like a smell of a fragrance.
But his, olive oil does not smell.
Not olive, that's what I said. Not olive oil. When we say oil, we mean fragrance. Back then, in those times, they used to make fragrance from oil, not from alcohol. They use to extract the smell in the oil. So we use your oil, we means about the smell, like fragrance. So like when we say Shemen Turak Shemecha, your name spread out like a good smell of a good fragrance. In other words, first of all, it means that he has a good name. One second, Ruhama. First of all, it means that he has a good name, good reputation. On the other hand, it means that everyone can smell it. It's not only, it doesn't belong only to her. There is many other ladies that can smell his good name, that can see his good reputation, and can maybe fulfill their also desire that they have to this man. Think about this in that way. Yes, Ruhama?
Yes, because we say also, if a man leaves a good name, don't share, be sharing.
Thank you very much. Look in source number, we are in source number 7. Another book from Shlomo Hamel, from Kohelet. He says as follows, Tov, Shem, Mishem, and Tov. Better a good name than precious oil. Precious oil would be here again a fragrance. So we can see that Shlomo HaMelech is using this motive over and again regarding name. There is name, the reputation of the person is like the fragrance. You leave, you say something, you leave, but your smell is still in the room. Your reputation is still something that you can feel that someone was here and there is something in it. Alright? Think about it in that sense. But what I want to understand, first of all, is that we started with taste, now we move to smell. Alright, so with wine we move to fragrance. Let's continue more, forward. What is the third line that we have in this song? Third line we said stands by itself. We had two lines, right? We had the first has two parts, the second line has two parts, and the third line has only one part. Alken alamot ehavucha. Therefore, young maidens love you. Now it makes very much sense now. Because his smell, his reputation is like fragrance. It's like, it's spread all around. So of course many maidens would love him. He doesn't belong only to her. She wants him, but she understands many others want him as well. So this is, when I ask love or disappointment, think about it. Is that a love song that can be fulfilled? Or is that like almost like a breakup song? Or she's saying, I wish I could love you. I will never have the ability to fulfill this desire. It will just never be fulfilled. Think about it in that sense. When we say many, therefore young maidens love you, we say, I'm not the only one. Maybe I will never be the only one. I really want to. And if I can, just give me some of your kisses. Just something from your kisses. A little bit. Let's drink wine together. Let's go for a drink. Let's do something. Just look at me. I'm right here. We're talking about second person, third person. We're moving between the two all the time. This is for the first part, and again, not for no reason the third line has only one part and not two parts, because when we have one part, it's more dramatic. We move between two parts, but we finish with Alken alamot ehavucha. Therefore, young maidens love you. There is no more. Nothing. I'm sad. This is in a sad tone in that sense. Alright? I read it with the sad music on the oven. This is for the first verse, the first part. The second part is, again, they say reflective. And it starts as follows. Moshcheni acharecha narutza. This is very difficult in Hebrew. Very difficult. Why is it very difficult? First of all, because we say Moshcheni. Moshcheni, like in English, draw me, pull me closer. Narutza, you shall pull me closer and we will run. Run after you. Moshcheni acharecha narutza. Draw me, we will run after, I will run after you, and you will run after who? After you, right? Doesn't make sense very much with the grammar. So I saw by Dr. Yoshi Farjun, another scholar in Israel, a great, great Talmid Chacham who teaches Tanakh. He says as follows, that this is like, how do you say it in English? Flirt, that's a word in English also, we said it in Hebrew. Almost like a flirt. She tells him, pull me a little bit. Just flirt with me a little bit. I will run after you right away. You don't need too much. Just Moshcheni, pull me a little bit. Come to me, draw me a little bit closer to you. Don't worry, I will run after you right after you do that. She's playing a little bit hard to get, which is a progress from the first part of the song. In the first part, she was very desperate. Now it seems like she's a little bit also hard to get. In a sense, she's saying, I'm desperate, but I'm not so desperate. I still want you also to play your move and also to come up to me and pull me in that sense. I will say even more than that. Look, we started with Ishakeni, and the first word was Ishakeni, and here the first word is Mashcheni, right? Also, kind of the same word, but now it's in second person, right? It's not about third person, it's about second person, right? Which is very, very, very interesting. I would also say that Yirmiyahu, the word Moshcheni, draw me, pull me, appears in Yirmiyahu. Navi Jeremiah says as follows, in source number, I brought it in source number 8, sorry. Source number 8, the Navi, the prophet Yirmiyahu, says as follows, מרחוק השם נראה לי ואהבת עולם אהבתיך על כן משכתיך חסד. Or in English, the Lord revealed himself to me from afar or from of old. Eternal love I conceived for you. Then, therefore, I continue my grace to you. Which is very interesting because in that sense, continue means just don't stop. Maybe we should read it, and this would be my own reading. Not draw me physically closer, just don't forget me. Don't forget me. Moshcheni acharecha. Just continue love. Continue to know who I am. Maybe according to this reading that I'm offering, there is a kind of a background between the two. There is a kind of history. Maybe he knows her in a sense. Maybe she knows him. Maybe there was something back then, like Rashi would say. He says she's a widow. Maybe they were married. I'm not going that far. But maybe he knows who she is. And when she says Moshcheni, she says, just remember who I am. Just put it in your mind. Don't forget me. Like your Miyahu and Abi is using Moshcheni as continuation. Alright? This is for that. Also we move again between the second person and the third person. Yeah, Moshcheni, Narutza, we will run first person, or you should grab me. Again, there is lack of intimacy in that sense. Haviyani Hamelech Chadarav. He or the king has brought me into his chambers. Very difficult. First of all, who is the king? Is that the man we're talking about that you want so much, but everyone wants him as well? If it is, he brought her to the chambers. That makes sense with the song. She wants him to kiss her, so now he brings her to his chambers. First of all, I will suggest, like we see in the entire song, this is not facts. This is the woman speaking to herself. This is her dream. She wants the man to bring her to his chambers. She wants him to do so. He has not done so. She wants him to bring him, like she wants to drink with him wine. So in her eyes, she says, Haviyani, just call me, draw me, flirt a little bit. We will run together after you to your chambers. You don't even need to come to my place. I'll come to your place. I'll come to your house. I'll come to your palace. You don't need to be with me. I'll be with you. Just come and be with me. First of all, I will suggest reading it again. As her own desires, or as her own feelings in that sense. I will say even further than that. Who is the king? Who is the king? What is the king here? Is he doing here? So the simple answer would be, the king is Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, right? That would be the obvious question, and the obvious answer. And I'll tell you more than that. There is also evidence for that. Maybe this is Shlomo HaMelech. Why? Because look in source number 9. Source number 9, in another place, in Shir HaShirim, again, we see the word Hamelech, and now it says explicitly Shlomo. In verse number 9, King Shlomo has made a canopy of the wood of Lebanon. That's another verse in chapter 3 of Shir HaShirim. So we see Hamelech appears sometimes just as Hamelech, with no name, sometimes as Hamelech Shlomo. So maybe here we talk about Shlomo Hamelech. Maybe Shlomo Hamelech wrote this, as according to most of the traditional explanations, he's talking about himself. And that's a fascinating thing to think about, which I don't have an answer. Why would Shlomo HaMelech write down his song from a feminine perspective of an unfulfilled love where he is the target, the goal of the love? It's very difficult, very difficult. There probably might be a very good answer for that, which I unfortunately don't have. But it might be a very good question to ask. And we'll add more than that, and I will also... Aziz says, I don't think I brought him in the sources. Oh, I brought him in source number 10. Professor Aziz says, source number 10, who is the king? The lover is not a king, he says, but an ordinary person, perhaps even a shepherd, he says, because he brings it from proofs from other places. Rather, an image in which the woman likens the man to a king expresses her admiration for the man, but at the same time also expresses distance. He continues with the distance motive. He says, not for no reason, she is calling him a king because she feels there is distance between them and she admires him. So she calls him a king. I will also add, if I can, to those two, to answer the third answer. Based on the other book that we have in the Tanakh, which the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't appear in it even once. You know, there's two books in the Bible, in the Tanakh, that doesn't have the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem, of God even once. First one is Shir HaShirim, Song of Songs, doesn't mention God. Second one is? Esther, thank you. Esther. And also in the book of Esther, we find the word HaMelech more than 200 times. And not only that, look in source number 11. There's a verse in source number 11 from Megillat Esther that says as follows. Balayla hahu nadadashnat ha-melech. That's how we read it, right? Vayomer lehavi et sefer ha-zichronot divrei ha-yamim v'iyu nikrei lifnei ha-melech. That night, the king's sleep was disturbed. So he called for the bringing of the book of archives of historical events to be recited before the king. That's where there is a turning point that he sees that Mordechai has saved him from the guards that wanted to execute him, to kill him. So he brings Mordechai, he calls him, he brings Haman, sorry. He calls, he says, what do you like to do to a person that the king really wants to honor? And he gives him, put him on a horse, and so on and on. This is a turning point. And we use the word that king. Look at the fabulous Midrash from Pirkei Derabbi Eliezer, the source number 12. How they understand it. That night, the king's sleep was disturbed, and look what they understand. And that night, the throne of the king, who is the king of kings, the holy one, blessed be he, became unsteady, because he saw that Israel was in great distress. In other words, this king is not a regular king, according to the Midrash. When we say HaMelech, and we read it with special tune, when we read the scroll, the Megillah, we say HaMelech, because we refer that this king is not only a Hashverosh, but rather it refers to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to God itself. So maybe also in Shir HaShirim, if we're looking for hints about the fact that the book is written for the sake or the relation between the people of Israel and God, when we say HaMelech here, the king brings to his chambers, we talk about God as well, like we do in
the Old Testament.
In different places, right? We call Kadosh Baruch Hu Melech Malchei
Hamelechim. Hashem is also called Melech Malchei Hamelechim.
You're right, King of Kings. You're right. We also have Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, in a sense. We call God also our King in many, many, many different places. You are very right, Ricky. Thank you for that. I will also say that maybe we can see what I just said also in Rashi. Maybe we can see it in Rashi, because Rashi, in source number, source number 13, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we're talking about source number 15, yeah, right? Yeah, 15, we move to 15, alright, before, we're going to jump to 15, before we move to 13, 14, sorry. Source number 15, Rashi says, Habiyani HaMelech HaDorav, the king has brought me into his chambers, and even today, I still have joy and happiness that I cleaved to you. He continues his commentary from the beginning, where he said, this is about God and the people of Israel. They were once together, now just separate. The Israel, the people of Israel in the exile, they're in the Galut. They want God. They remember what God has done to them. And they say, as the good that God has brought to them, that God brought to them. And he says that this HaMelech is a Kadosh Baruch Hu, not Shlomo, not a shepherd, she called him HaMelech. This is God itself. And the woman says, I remember you bringing me to the chambers. Even though I'm not in the chambers now, I remember you bringing me to the chambers. And I, one second, Ricky, I will add also another evidence why I think it talks about God. Because look at the next sentence in the song. The next sentence says, Nagila venismecha bach. Now, Nagila venismecha, that's a term that appears in different places in the Tanakh. Not so much, only three. Only three places in the Tanakh we have Nagila venismecha. Alright? We say it also in Lecha Dodi, in different places. We sing Nagila venismecha. Nagila venismecha just means we will exalt and rejoice, or we'll be glad and rejoice in you. And all the three, we have three instances of Nagila venismecha in the Tanakh. You can see it. The first one, or one of them, is in Shir HaShirim, right here, that we see. The other two are in source number 13 and source number 14. And look in what context do we bring them there. Source number 13. In that day, they shall say, says the prophet Yeshayahu, this is our God, we trusted in Him, and He delivered us. This is the Lord in whom we trusted, let us be glad and rejoice in His deliverance. So we see this same two words, Nagila v'nismecha in the Hebrew, Nagila v'nismecha be'yeshuato, means in the Yeshua of God, in His deliverance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It appears again in Psalms, in Tehillim, source number 14. Ze hayom asa Hashem Nagila v'nismecha, but we say it in Hallel, in the prayer of Hallel. Psalms 14, this is the day that the Lord has made, let us be glad and rejoice on it. So we see we have three times glad and rejoice, Nagila v'nismecha, in the entire Tanakh. Two of them refer exclusively to God. Maybe the third one is a hint, a reference, that there is a spiritual, religious meaning behind this song as well. Just for me to tell you that maybe the commentators that says there is something between God and Israel, they're not so far from the text. We can see in the text, in the way the text is used, or the words that are put in the text, we can see hints that maybe God is somewhere here in this song. Alright? Think about it in that way. So it's not necessarily going to be King Shlomo, not necessarily going to be a shepherd or a person that she looks at him and she thinks she's the king. Maybe that is God Himself. We have 7 more minutes. I do want to continue a little bit more and finish the song, because we finish the song.
Can I
just
say something?
Yes, please.
Hadarad makes me think of maybe it's Beit HaMikdash.
Beit HaMikdash, Shlomo HaMelech, who wrote it, built the temple, built Beit HaMikdash. There's
she
many hints. Wonderful.
She wants to be taken into the Beit HaMikdash.
Wonderful.
And there she's going to rejoice.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. The next sentence after Nagila v'nismecha bach says Nazkira dodecha miyayin. In English, we recall your love more than wine. First of all, again, we see wine here. But now the wine plays a different role. If in the first part of the song, wine was, it played the role of something that I can compare my love to, that is even greater than wine, or maybe like we saw Rav Yosef Krah that says, the wine is my tool, my way to get to you, if we're going to sit on a drink, we're going to drink wine together, here it's totally different. We recall your love more than wine. What does it mean to recall wine? What does it mean to recall wine in that sense? I will offer different answers. My first answer would be to read it in a different way. Wait, let me open the source. One sec. First of all, I will offer my own before we move to commentators. I would say that recall wine would be that just after wine, someone don't really remembers some stuff, right? And he drank some good wine, don't remember what happened yesterday, how did he get to this situation, maybe he had too many glasses of a very good wine. Here she says, recall your love more than wine. In other words, when we say, don't forget me, maybe, right? When we say, maybe you should, mashcheni, it would be continue remembering me. We say, don't forget me like wine, but rather, recall, remember me, mention me, know who I am, that I will not be just like an evening with wine that we just drank together and we forgot who I am in the first verse, but even if we drink and drink wine together and we go out to a date, also the next morning, remember who I am and continue to remember me more and more. So even though we drink wine, that's not going to be only a temporary kind of relation, of connection, but more than that. I will also say that we can see there is evolution in the song. Why? Because we started with drinking. We started with comparing our love to drink, which is something I can feel the taste. It's very close to me. In order to drink something, I need to draw it very close to my mouth to drink it. We said your love is like wine. Then we moved to talk about smell. Your love or your name is like fragrance. Now fragrance, smell, it's also close. I need to use my face to feel it, my senses, but it's not as close as drinking. It's not as close as tasting, because I can smell something even if it's far from me, even if we're in the same room. Many people can smell the same thing, but not many people can taste the same taste at the same time. So now we draw more people closer. Maybe we took one step back, and we finished the song with mentioning, remembrance, recall. We started with, please kiss me. I want you so much. Let him kiss me with the mouth. It's like wine. And then slowly, slowly, this woman takes one step backwards and she says, maybe if you're not gonna love me or kiss me, you're not gonna drink wine with me. Let me just smell you. Maybe I can smell you. Maybe that's gonna be enough. But she understands that maybe that she can do, and she will not get to his chambers. She takes another step back, and now she says, you know what? I'm not gonna drink with you. Probably that's never gonna happen. I will not even smell you. Just know who I am. Just remember me. Just know I exist. Maybe there is progress throughout the song by the different motives that the poet is using, and according to this woman that's saying those different motives, maybe there is a progress in a sense that it started with a huge, huge, desire to this man, but it finishes with almost like a disappointment where she says she agrees and she admits that maybe this love will never be able to be fulfilled, so just please remember me. And the last line of the entire song closes it all. She says, Mei shalim ehavucha. They loved you sincerely. What does it mean? First of all, we can say maybe they loved you because it's worth loving you. But I read it in a very tragic tone. I read it as, I will not ever be able to sit and drink with you wine for you to love me. They love you, comma, sincerely. She finishes the song saying, I'm not the only one here. There are many, many other girls that want you. And unfortunately, this is the truth. So we started with her imagination. We started with her dream, and we finished with the facts. We finished with the truth. There is a progress in the song. There is a very much meaning of every and each word of the song, on every and each sentence of the song. And we can say, we can offer that if we see that, first of all, as a love song, then I will call it a disappointment love song. Because she wanted him so much, and it draws her all the way back until she started with her imagination and finishes with her truth. What really happens that many, many love him, and she's only one of them. And we can think about it as a commentator, maybe in the mold of the commentators, maybe as a parable between Am Yisrael and God, in a sense that maybe it's very, very difficult also to feel connection to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If we compare it to love, or to an unfulfilled love, we want to drink wine with God. Who of us didn't want to sit on a drink with a Kadosh Baruch Hu and have the opportunity one by one to really speak with Him and ask what we want to ask? But eventually we say, they loved you. There are many. I'm only one of Am Yisrael. I'm only one religion out of many religions. I'm only maybe one planet out of many planets. Who am I? And we finish with this kind of pessimistic, maybe almost tragic kind of tone to a song that started with high imaginations, please kiss me with the kisses of your mouth, finishes with, I'm only one, but there are many, many others, and this is the truth. Think you can take it to whatever approach you want to take it. It's really the comment, the interpretation would be up to you. Thank you very much. I hope we managed to dive into at least one song of Shir HaShirim and to understand it a little bit. I'm here for questions if you have, and we will be again next week with the next song of Shir HaShirim. We'll do the same thing with another song. We'll try to maybe also compare the other song to the first song. We'll see maybe there is any connections between the songs. But thank you very much. I hope we managed a little bit to understand something from the song. Yes, Claudette.
What I find interesting about this two